Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Please be advised that Little Miss Recap contains adult language.
Hey guys, welcome to Little Miss Recap, the podcast where we talk about things 2 weeks after they've happened. My name's Amy Archer. I'm your host. I'm here at my favorite therapist, Tess Brigham, from the Psych Legal Pop podcast. Hi, Tess.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Tess and I were talking about a whole host of things today, and we decided that we're going to talk a little bit about Garrison Brown at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we won't put it at the beginning. We're going to talk Love is Blind. Mm-hmm. But if you guys are Sister Wives fans and you're interested in hearing a little bit of a chat about Garrison and what has happened in that fandom, you can hang on to the end and we'll do something there.
All right.
All right. So why don't you tell us, Tess, what's going on over at Psych Legal Pop? What are you guys doing?
Well,
what's happening over there?
What's happening? Well, we have been covering Love is Blind, and but we finished and we've been covering Seeking Sister Wives, and I know you are too.
Oh, boy, is that a show?
I have not watched this show.
Is everything I need to harness my Cody Brown rage.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. But my God, that man loves a tank top. I mean, just a tank top.
Oh, yes. Yes. Did you watch all seasons or is this your first?
No. This is the first time I had. I knew about the couple that they were very famous because I'd seen some episodes in the first season. What were their names? The something family. I have to look them up.
Snowdens?
Snowdens. Thank you.
Dimitri and
I knew about the
Ashley?
Snowdens. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And I knew a bit about their story and what was going on. So I'd watched a few episodes of the first season and then I stopped watching and now I really want to go back and I just have to
find you have to because you have to see my love Sidian. You have to see him.
Oh, Sidian. Okay.
Sidian and Tasha, they're in season, I want to say 3 and 4.
Oh, okay.
But I love him. He's like, he's right now, he's selling a book. He's writing about personal mythos, which I'm totally into.
Okay.
He's got this Willy Wonka type character going that he's doing his social media. I'm here for him. He's just like, he's really, really smart and like artistic and kind of out there. And that's what I love. So there you go.
Oh, okay. That's a different personality for this show.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is.
Yeah. We're doing that. And, we've got a very exciting announcement on Wednesday the 20th. I'll just tease that.
To tell me what that is when we're off air.
Okay, I will. Okay. But
I'm waiting.
You're going to be like, oh, it's just that?
Okay. Yes, I think I know. Yeah. Okay, so are you guys doing, I know you guys do documentaries a lot. Do you have anything coming up doing that?
Well, this Thursday, we are going to be talking about the NFL because we had our Uncle Bill, who we talk about on the show, who's our semi-producer. He worked for the NFL for 20 plus years as a substance abuse program director. So we're just talking about all the big picture NFL and just playing sports and, you know, this less about sort of the controversies, but more about this, right, the documentaries like Last Chance U or Cheer, right, this idea of what drives people to keep trying and trying and trying, like going to a junior college for 4 or 5 years for this dream, right? Yeah. Did you watch Cheer?
No.
That show, the networks? Okay. Mm-mm. If you haven't watched Cheer, you probably don't, because that show, that is a great documentary, but that's a whole
I've story. Heard of it, and I actually heard it was really good, but I just, it didn't,
Well, what happened was the first season was great. It sort of took everyone by storm. And then the second season was sort of this typical, right? What does fame do to people? And then all of a sudden things that people were doing come out to the light. And then you're like, oh, you're not quite the person that we thought you were.
All right.
So sort of typical.
Check it out. Yeah. I'll check it out between playing. I have this iPad game. I'm playing Cooking Fever. I keep talking about it to everybody. Between playing that and solving murders and watching trash, I'll fit it in somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll fit it in somewhere.
Yeah. But this actually, but we're going up to our, because we grew up in Mendocino County in California, and we're going up there this weekend. We're going to go talk to our father about all the stuff that happens up there. Jim Jones, Stephen Stainer.
Oh my God. So much shit has happened up there. I'm watching the Polly Klaas's truth about
murderer.
I'm watching The Truth About Jim. Did you see this?
I've heard about it. It is Max, Jim Jones.
It's really good.
It is Jim Jones. No, okay.
I think it's Jim Jones because it looks like Jim Jones and it's The Truth About Jim. But it's some guy that was this young woman is doing it. It was her step grandfather.
Yes.
It's like, I think he was a murderer.
Yes.
And in the beginning, they're talking about like all the crazy unsolved murders from California, specifically like Northern California.
Yeah.
And how it was like the murder capital of the world in the 70s. And I'm
Well, And up when you go up but north of the Bay Area, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous, but it's just lots of land. And it was known for many, many years before marijuana was legalized, like the Golden Triangle, you know, the Emerald Triangle, because there were people just living out in the woods, making meth, selling weed, growing weed. And you could hide up there very easy. So they found Polly Klaas's murderer. He was up there and like a trailer off of things.
Okay.
They found Stephen Stainer, the kidnapper. They found him like right in front of the Palace Hotel downtown Ukiah. Like Ukiah and that whole area, because Ukiah is the county seat of Mendocino. So even though it's this teeny tiny little town, it's sort of where everything happens. So we're going to go up there. And little did we know, our father had been, and mother had been recruited by Jim Jones more than once. Apparently Jim Jones and his little faction was out there in the '70s trying to get people. And like they had wined and dined, wrote my mom letters. Mom's like, let me see if I can find those letters. You know?
They really presented themselves as like progressive and hippie and like, you know, it was a big thing that he was inviting black couples into what would you call that? His flock, I guess. You know, and just kind of being very progressive for the time, I guess, and for a church at the time. And so he was telling everyone, like, come on, I'm this loving guy, da, da, da. And it started off that way, this message of, like, inclusion and love, and then it just took a turn. And I don't know about you, but I could go down rabbit hole with that whole thing. Oh my God. I'm so – and then did you listen to the podcast and you could hear, like, the footage, the audio tapes from when they're drinking the Kool-Aid and you hear the kids crying?
No.
And it's like, oh, it's so bad.
What podcast is this?
I don't know. I'll send it to you if I can find it. But I listened to it. It's like 6 hours long and I was listening to it and it was amazing. It was wild. It was wild. But to think of where he started and then where he ended was really strange.
Yes. Though I think even then my parents were like, you knew it was a cult. Like you knew it was a little off. And apparently what he was also doing was, our father was telling us, he's like, but even though it seemed like, he's inviting these black couples in, what he was doing was going to the city, San Francisco, looking for people of color who were struggling and saying, come up to Northern California, which is, you know, such a welcoming place.
And presenting it under the guise of inclusion, right?
But really the taking advantage of and doing some, you know, really shady. Yeah, my parents were part of this because they were in the city in San Francisco and it was expensive way back in the early 70s. It was still expensive then. And they were part of this group of like educated, kind of liberal people that were going to go back to the land. And so they went up there and we grew up with a lot of other people that were also either around there or this idea.
Did you grow up on a commune? Are you telling me?
No. But no. we were far, even though it was a little hippy dippy, like we had a pool and we had like, okay. My father's okay. an attorney. Like it was,
okay.
You know, he drove a Porsche. Like it's, we were.
Was he a polygamist?
No, nothing like that. But it was more of this idea of, you know, let's move away. We'll raise our children in this environment where they can be free and let's have gardens and do all this kind of very tie-dyeing. Yeah. We did a lot of tie-dyeing.
I think there's a big, I think there's a big movement towards that now.
Yes, there is.
Like this homesteading, like a homesteading type situation.
A little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think a lot of people did that with the pandemic. A lot of people were like, I got to get out of the city. I got to do this.
I was baking bread during the pandemic. I don't know about you.
No, I was a therapist in the pandemic. We were
Oh, you were
nothing.
Busy. You were busy.
We were busy. Yeah. Very, very busy. So anyway, yeah.
Okay, so that sounds interesting. So that's going to be an episode you're going to do?
Yeah, upcoming. We're going to do a whole series on Mendocino County.
Oh, that's awesome. And then when are you going to tackle Scott Peterson? I'm sure that's coming too.
Yeah, it's coming. I know that you all covered it. I think
A rabbit hole with that. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I want to, I think what we really, the angle we want to take is sort of, which is my big question is, what did the LA Innocence Project, what did the Innocence Project see that we're not seeing? Mm-hmm. Like what's going on? Why, why did they take this?
I'm going to be following this case closely. I need him to stay where he is. I think he is where he belongs. All right. So let's talk about weeks old news. Love is Blind. So,
but it's not like every time I get on social media,
I know
it's not. It's like all these people are doing is talking.
Tell everybody why you were late to our recording.
Yes. Cause I went down a rabbit hole of TikTok because I was like, oh, let me get the latest of Love is Blind news since it's been a little bit. And then all of a sudden I looked up and I was, you know, we were supposed to meet.
She was only like 5 minutes late, but I'm joking.
I dressed fast.
All right.
But at the same time, are we hearing anything new? When I was going down the rabbit hole of TikTok, I'm like, I have not learned anything new, you know, at all.
So I have learned some new stuff, which we'll talk about.
Okay, good.
But I also want to say we didn't really, and this was my choice, that I didn't have you on to talk about the weddings because I'm like, it's kind of a nothing burger. And you and your sister covered it very well and in detail over on Psych Legal Pop. But one of the conversations that to me was most riveting was Clay's parents, correct?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
I was here for that.
I mean, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. Definitely not on Love is Blind, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like that on television where I'm like, this is the most honest conversation these two people have, they've had in a long, long time.
Right.
And I think that I think everyone could relate to it because, you know, especially once you hit a certain age, you realize like everything is so layered, everything in your family, all your experiences, why you feel the way that you do, why it feels difficult, right? And we have very complex feelings about our parents because they are people just like we are, and they make mistakes and they are not fully formed people. You know, they're developing and growing when we're born. And so we have all of these layers to ourselves, and we know so much more now about past, you know, about generational trauma and how that passes down. And
that's what we were seeing. That's what we were seeing. Like Margarita, God love her. She is the champion of this entire series.
She is.
She was like, first, we didn't know that she knew. We didn't know that she knew that Clay knew about the bang trips, right? Like we didn't know about this.
Well, and that's what I was wondering. I was like, did he tell her during this because he was like, I revealed this and I think he did
because she seemed like, here's my guess, just being a mother, my guess is she knew, but she was hoping against all hope that he either didn't remember or misremembered it, or you know what I mean. And once she found out that he knew, she was like, okay, I guess I need to confront this, like I need to talk about it. And the way, see, first of all, that father with Clay,
oh God, he was a piece of work. Another Trevor.
Oof. Just the narcissism just spilling out of him.
Yeah.
And then to see her just kind of shut him right down. He was like, oh, I found you. She's like, yeah, you found me, but you treated me like a piece of shit. I was like,
yeah. Yeah.
Margarita was my hero. Okay. Yes. So that's really it. Johnny and Amy, blah, blah, blah. They're happy. Clay does AD the biggest favor of her life, even though she doesn't know it now.
Well, and now have you seen her? She's talking now, right? So what's so interesting is that now AD's saying, I see now, and I, yes, believe people, what they say, and mm-hmm. and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I really want to know how much of that did she really, when is she coming to all this? Like, I've heard her talk about it, but I would love to know, like, did you kind of know that in the back of your mind during the whole process, but you were caught up in it? Because she was still 100%, like, yeah. You know, she wanted to marry him. And, you know, I like Clay. I feel for Clay. I think Clay has had what his father did was abuse and trauma mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. with it. But at the same time, you know, just seeing where Clay is today, it's been a year. I'm a little like, oh, Clay, you're not, you know, you've made a little progress, but not enough, really, because he's still making excuses for his father. He's still kind of doing the same. You're the love of my life. I love you. He's still talking in these grandiose
platitudes.
Platitudes. Thank you. That's the word.
Well, and the thing about her is she described herself as a fix-a-ho. So from one mm-hmm. fix-a-ho to another, AD, mm-hmm. all she sees in him is potential.
Yeah.
She sees that he sees, and Clay has potential above and beyond most men because he sees the problem. Right? Yes. Most people don't even acknowledge there's a problem. Like, mm-hmm. what are you even talking about? He sees the problem. He so desperately wants help, but he needs to understand that he can't get that. He can't have somebody save him. He has to save him. He has to do the work. Yes. But she's clinging on to that potential. And trust me, girl, it's not going to be realized. Like, you can't, just like he can't expect you to save him, you can't save somebody else.
Yes.
They have to meet you. And AD, you are like, she just deserves so much better. I understand. And I do think that Clay has he's worth saving, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like he can be a fantastic human in, like you said, a year of really hard work.
Yeah. I mean, a couple years. I feel like he needs a bit of time. I think the other thing too is that it's work in the sense of you need time, because Clay has really got to confront the stuff with his father. He's got to start hating his father a bit, right? He's got to go through the process of hating his father. And then maybe there's a year or two of that. And then he's got to get into the place of like, okay, I've got to love my father for who he is. I can be upset and angry with him and not agree with him on these things, but I can also love him for this. And these are my boundaries. And it's a lot of work. It takes a bit of time. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and I know I went through it too, where you kind of have to get through those places of being angry, and it's very normal for adult kids to be angry at their parents for a little while for various reasons.
Absolutely.
And just kind of like, parents need to sort of sit with it and write it out and trust that like your kid will get through it, because there's lots of rebelling as a kid, not just when you're little.
I totally agree. So let's talk about them at the reunion. So they come out. We don't know if they're together or not. There was that video that surfaced that they were together at Thanksgiving, but apparently mm-hmm. that means nothing now.
Yeah.
He is giving her, again, just talking in this word salad, right?
Yes.
And he's telling her that she's the love of his life, like you said, and he made a mistake and da-da-da. And Nick and Vanessa, you know, they come right out and ask him, like, did your dad apologize to you yet? And he's like, in his own way, right there.
Yeah.
Nope. So your dad did not apologize.
Yeah.
And Clay has been taught to idolize his father. That is the only acceptable relationship his father will allow him to have to him. Mm-hmm. I am your golden statue, and you need to just worship me on all levels. And Clay doesn't know how to break that down. But then the interesting part is we learn that he was looking at Brett and Tiffany. Remember, he was saying, watching Love is Blind. And so he was looking at Brett. And I talked with Amanda about this. Like, Clay seemed very uncomfortable being vulnerable in that moment with Brett. Like, if you watch his body language, he was very, like, puffed up chest, like, guarded. Mm-hmm. And almost like he didn't want to have the conversation. And Brett's out there like crying, and Tiffany's crying, Amy Archer's crying. And Brett's like, you know, I didn't have it. Like, Brett is somebody who's done the work.
Yes.
I
love Brett.
I love Brett too. Oh, love my God. Love
Brett.
Him.
Love him. Brett. Love Brett.
I love
and Tiffany.
Tiffany too. Mm-hmm.
I love the two of them together. I want to be their friends. I love
just
them.
Them having that conversation about black men and emotions. Yes. I could have watched that all fucking night.
Yeah. And I think that's what's very interesting about this. I think we're seeing things that we don't get to see. We don't get to see. And I think that Clay did bring up a lot of really important points to the fact that, you know, I don't have that many role models. And when I look into the media, this is what I see. And, you know, and what I see is that in many ways, right, it's acceptable to cheat on your partner. Right. It's except, you know, it's I've been told that it's part of our culture. It's part of this. It's part of that. Right. Mm-hmm. So I thought all of that was so fascinating to watch and so important. And I think that it did give us a glimpse into something that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And I think it's really, really it's compelling and important and all of those things. And at the same time, yes, you can see the differences between 30-year-old Clay and 38-year-old
right, Brett. Like,
you know, Brett, where you're seeing sort of what that is. Like if you put in that time and energy and work into that. Again, though, I think that maybe Brett's situation, which is very different, like I think Brett didn't have any role models. So what Clay is battling against is I have a role model, but I need to think about this differently versus someone who I have no role model. So I've got to go find it.
Right. Yeah.
So I think Clay's got a little bit more to do for himself in terms of what Brett's had to overcome, but he can get there. It's just that people usually just don't want to do the work because it's hard.
No, that's a really good point. Like I talk about my dad a lot on the show because my dad had a very problematic father role model growing up. And my grandfather, like he was a drummer in a jazz band. He toured in the USO shows. And when he died, we had to have two funerals, one for his other family and one for us. And he was just you know, and my dad grew up seeing that. And I do believe that if you don't find nuance, you do one of two things. You either repeat it or you rail against it and go completely the opposite way. So my dad's philosophy to parenting has always been, I'm going to do the opposite of what my father did. And that has worked for us, but I feel like it has been at my father's expense to some degree because he also isn't able to, he does things out of guilt a lot. Do you know what I mean? I should do this. I should do that. I should go here. I should be at every game, you know, whatever. And a lot of times his own personal wants and desires are just in the background because he has this knee-jerk reaction to doing the opposite of what he saw as a bad example. So I think therapy and working through it or whatever, faith, however you work through it, helps you to find that middle ground, right? Like it's like, I don't want to follow this role model, but I also, you know, need to be my own person in some way.
Yeah. Well, do you feel like your father, I don't know how much you want to get into this, but I'm just curious.
He doesn't fucking listen.
But was the feeling that you felt like your father, there was like this feeling of that you started to feel guilty or you felt like he was there and showing up, but he wasn't happy to be there?
I think so. I think sometimes. Yeah. Like my dad was never you know, we were in dance. He was at every single dance show, but I don't think he wanted to be there all the time. You know, it's a lot. Yeah. And I think my dad is inherently like he's an artist and he's very like he can be very insular. Like he likes to spend time just kind of painting and doing his own thing. And I think that, yeah, I think as I got older, I certainly felt that a little bit. And it made me feel sad for him because I was kind of like, I would have liked to have seen him be able to do maybe things. I think he stayed married, him and my mom both stayed married too long to each other in an unhappy marriage for that reason. You know what I mean? So like, I just think it colors your decisions. You're not being authentically who you want to be sometimes when you're just railing against a certain stereotype that you see or an example that you don't want to repeat.
Yeah. Because I think the thing is that if your father had taken the time to think, okay, I don't want to repeat this pattern. So what does it look like for me? What is it that I want? Then even if he was showing up and he would prefer, because a lot of parenting, I mean, all of parenting is doing shit that you don't really want to do. Right. So I do wonder if it's like, is it, it sounds like it wasn't so much the act of him showing up for all your dance stuff. It was the energy at which he was showing up. Whatever energy you felt whatever he was feeling in that moment. Yep. And I think that's the other part of it that parents don't understand. I've had to learn it because my son has a lot of anxiety, and mm-hmm. I would always be trying to talk to him about something. He's like, stop yelling at me. And I'm like, I'm not yelling. Oh, but you realize I'm a loud talker, and I'm like heightened, and this is how you're experiencing me right now. Even though I'm not angry, you're experiencing me as angry. And so as a parent, that's another layer to the many jobs that you have, is recognizing, like, what's my energy when I come to my kid? What's my, what's going on with me that's preventing me from being present for this child? And that's a tremendous amount of work.
Right, a good example is, my dad hates to travel. He has a lot of anxiety around travel from when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. So he hates to travel, but he felt like he had to go on these little, like, we'd go to the Jersey Shore every year. Mm-hmm. Felt like he had to go. And like, in retrospect, I just feel so bad, because I know he was really pushing himself to a place of discomfort. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Where it would not have been a big deal if my mom was like, oh, I'll take the girls to the beach and we'll just do a girls trip or whatever. But it's like, I think, you know, I don't know. I don't know why I'm bringing up my dad into this, but it strikes me as, my dad is somebody who had a very similar example to who Clay had. Mm-hmm. As a role model, but he went the opposite way, if that makes sense. And I feel like you need to kind of be in the middle somewhere.
I mean, and that's the part that's so hard, right? Is it's everything we can, hindsight's 2020. We can only connect the dots looking back, right? Like, I think that obviously if your father had, maybe if he was, I don't know how old he was when your parents got married and started having
kids. Oh, he was only 19.
Yeah. So I think that if he had more time, and I think he could have figured some of these things
100%.
out. But at the same time, it sounds like
it came from a place of love, really, and he was a wonderful father. But it's like, as you see your parents as adults and you see things in hindsight, I'm like, I wish he was just a little more authentically who he wanted to be. You know what I mean? And it kind of makes me sad. Anyway, that's Amy's therapy corner. Thank you. Next week, we'll tackle my mother. We'll need about 18 sessions for that. You know, girls and their mothers. So let's talk about Jeremy and Sarah Ann.
Jeremy.
God, he comes out looking like Don Johnson, right? 1984.
But you know what? It's like, to the detriment, you want to just keep nagging Laura, don't you? You just want to keep poking her and poking her and poking her to the point where you're going to look like an idiot, because that is the dumbest outfit. Yep. I mean, there were some doozies of outfits that we saw on this finale, but like, whoa, that was hands down the worst, because you knew where it came from. You knew where it came from. So you're kind of like, Jeremy, we see you. We see that you're doing what you're doing right now.
There is a camera, Jeremy. We can see you. And then so they're like, you know, oh, are you seeing anybody? He's like, yeah, I'm seeing somebody. And of course, Sarah Ann comes out. She's dressed like 1997 prom. I don't know what's happening there.
Oh, yeah. The body glitter
was distracting.
I felt really bad, because I was saying to Brooke, I said, so where do you go? The people wear glitter. I'm sorry, but like, there's few places where one wears full on body glitter. But apparently this was, because I'm older, not a millennial, but apparently this was like Bed Bath and Body Works, like, had a all over body glitter thing that you could buy. So I didn't know that existed.
Nobody wants to see this body accentuated. So I don't put glitter anywhere near my body.
But it's just like, what are you're putting glitter all over your body? Yeah. Anyway.
Hair. I don't know.
The choices.
She's a beautiful girl. The choices were not great.
Yes.
So they live together. He's wearing his Apple Watch. If you'll notice, we're all like, dun, dun, dun. Laura has been in Spain for business. Yes. So she's like, I like to say, via satellite.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And when Laura comes out, Sarah Ann says to Jeremy, do we clap? And he says, no. Oh, you got us good, Jeremy. You got her good. So they talk a little bit about that woman that said that she was previously engaged to him. He's like, no. I was already out on my own. He was probably in his new apartment for 3 days. And applied for Love Is Blind.
And when I was going down the TikTok rabbit hole, tripped upon the Natalie and Deep D that do the Out of the Pods.
Out of the Pods.
And, and one of them was talking, I think it was Deep D, was saying, oh, you know, when I saw his apartment, I was like, oh my God, he is so clean. This is what I aspire to. And then they're like, oh, wait a second. hit so clean because he's only been there for 5 minutes. Like he you know what I mean? It's like he might have just walked in and be like, I need a fully furnished apartment. He put his bag down, put up some clothes, and then ran for the airport to go to Love is Blind. And it was like, oh, you're fooling everybody yet again. Maybe you don't like dishes in the sink, but are you as clean as this? Because apparently not.
Yeah. This guy, I liked him when I first met him because I have I have a terrible picker. We all know it's broken. And it just lives inside of me in two pieces. Mm-hmm. And I liked him. And then by episode 3 or 4, I was like, wait, what's happening here? Of course I hate him. But he doesn't know what to do with himself. He doesn't know how to be honest. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to, he's just like, he's so angry at the world. He's so pissed off. I feel like there's an underlying something with him that's like allegedly, I'm just, you know, speculating here, but I feel like he doesn't have a great opinion of women in my,
I
think Laura was too strong of a woman for him.
Yes. My theory was, and I actually, who also had the same theory because I was listening to Reality Gays. They had the because they had this woman Damona, who I guess is a relationship expert.
That interview.
She
was great.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
And she said the same thing that I said. We said this independently of each other. I didn't take this from her, but I said to Brooke on our show, I said, I have this feeling that Jeremy wasn't very popular growing up, that he was kind of nerdy, kind of dorky. Women didn't really pay a lot of attention to him. He was sort of pushed away. And that, like, he got into college, he didn't go to college. Like, he got out of school and he
found success and did okay.
He found some success and, you know, like, lost a little weight, worked out, like, you know, just grew up, like, as we all do, and started to look good. And then women were paying attention to him. And I think that his sort of sarcasm that was part of who he was when he was young, it kind of became part of who he, you know, is as an adult, and that he's never really, he's still angry at women, angry at them for rejecting him, angry that they're only, you know, do you only love me now that I'm attractive. And listen, I'm sorry, but that's a little bit of how the world works. Like, I was heavier as a kid. I lost a bunch of weight and the world looked at me differently. Like,
of course, I wrote a whole book about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so you can either decide to be angry about that and angry for that, or you can decide, like, you know, there's a certain level of when you feel good about yourself, when you feel attractive, that's how the world sees you. So if how much of that is connected to how you look is really up to you and how you perceive that. Right. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I just feel like there's a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, a lot of, and Laura was very strong. I think it really pissed him off when his old tricks didn't work. Like, I sent her flowers. I tried to talk to her and he claimed she sent me really quote unquote mean abusive texts. And I'm like,
and Laura's like, bring the texts up. Let's see them.
Yeah. And I think they were like, I do not want to speak to you. You are a liar. Mm-hmm. Right. That was the text. Like, do not want to speak to you. I do not want your flowers. Please do not do that. We've got to just, let's move on. And I don't think it was until when really everybody got together and said, listen, this is Laura's talking about her grandmother. My grandmother flew in. This is my real life. This is embarrassing. This is it. That he really got like, but it wasn't that I need to apologize. It's like, oh, what I need to do right now is apologize because that's what's going to make me look the best. But he still doesn't believe he did anything wrong.
And that's kind of what Laura said. I almost called her Laura Ann. That's what Laura said. Like, she's like, I expected you guys to come out here with some humility.
Yeah.
And just be like, you know what? We're happy, but it sucks. And did you get this? Who was it? Oh, it was Chelsea. Said she ran into him a few times. Mm-hmm. And every time she ran into him, they had broken up. That looks like news to Sarah Ann.
Yes. Yes.
She did not have that information because she like wings her head around and is like, what? Say what?
Yeah. Because I think like, she thought they were just in fights and maybe he was like, oh, we're broken up or, you know. Yeah.
Well, we know she told AD that he had told her. Help me. Okay. He told Sarah Ann that he was breaking up with Laura. And then Sarah Ann conveyed that message to AD at the lake party. Mm-hmm. So like, we know that he does that kind of shit. Like, oh, well, I'm breaking up. Oh, it's over. You know what I mean? Even though it's really not. That's not the reality. So I have no doubt that he's telling Chelsea, hopefully, you know, maybe with the hopes to hook up with somebody else. Like, oh yeah, we're done. I'm done with Sarah Ann. But like, Sarah Ann's probably at his house, like waiting for him.
Yeah, but also I think that's why he and Sarah Ann are cut from the same cloth, because I think that same thing was that Sarah Ann Because in my TikTok rabbit hole, I saw that scene where Sarah Ann goes to Laura and says, you know, he picked you. And Laura's very, you know, Laura wasn't my favorite person, but I think she was very classy in the sense that she was like, she was like,
I agree with you about that. She wasn't my favorite either.
But you, she went to her and said, you deserve someone 1,000%. And, you know, just like not, she didn't want to make it this competition. She was just really saying like woman to woman, I, you know, I want you to have this too. And then I think Sarah Ann's parting words were like, yeah, I'll have, you know, I'll have my moment. And then the moment is, and then someone plays the jet skis, right? Like that's my, that's my moment. And I do, I'm sorry, but like, it was shady of her to text that email. I mean, that send that message. I mean, she could have barely said, great meeting you. Great experience. I wish you all the best.
Yeah.
That is one way to leave the door open, but you could have left it open in a real neutral way. But like, this was, whoa, you really aren't leaving. You don't want Jeremy to read between any lines at all. You need to put it right out there.
Hey everyone, stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It really irritated me that we did not see that scene during the episode, because it just, like, I would have liked to have seen that Sarah Ann actually approached Laura and said, look, I'm sorry for what happened, blah, blah, blah. Like, they, I feel like they, you know, I wrote about this in my newsletter today. Like, they just gave, they, the editors just fuck with us and create their own storylines. And I know that's not new, but Love is Blind does it almost like to the biggest extent where they are coloring like how we see people. Like, that would have helped me to have some empathy for Sarah Ann. Not much, but a little modicum of respect.
Yeah.
And yet, like, we just see her fucking off on jet skis. And that's what we think, like, okay, clearly she doesn't give a shit about anybody. Yeah. I hate when they withhold shit like that. I don't know why they would have. That would have been a really interesting scene.
Yeah.
To witness.
But the thing is about the scene is, even if I think it was in there, I still don't know if I would have thought, because it felt like a very insincere apology.
I'm sure it was, but at least she had the guts to go up to her. Like,
or did she?
Right, we don't know who initiated it.
Or did the producers force her to go do it? And she's like, okay,
that's
I got to figure this out. Or did she oh, I'm on television, so God, I better play cleanup here. I better figure this out. I don't know. I don't understand these producers at all. I know there was a lot of criticism on the reunion and the fact that they didn't talk enough about Jimmy and Chelsea you know, I don't know about these reunions. Why can't they just be, is it only really an hour and a half? Is it really live? Do you only have that much time?
I liked this one compared to a lot of the others, but I agree with you. Like, we need a lot more. Like, why do we get a 5-part 90-day single life tell all?
Yes.
And this is only an hour and 20 minutes. It was wild. What did you think of Nick Lachey reading Sarah Ann Forfilled about her videos?
Oh, yes. Because, you know, the producers on the show and they're pissed. They're really, really pissed. And I guess they all got together and said, okay, this has gone off the rails. It was started to happen in season 5. It's now season 6. It's off the rails and we've got to start cleaning up and we've got to, you know, put the hammer down. Because I think the thing is what I think in the past, what's happened is is that as the show was going on, and we all know as shows, you know, shows develop and people start to see their opportunities and you don't get people there for the quote unquote right reasons, we can see that happening. And then I think what happened was it was almost like the producers realized, like, oh, we have not set enough boundaries with these people mm-hmm. that we need to start setting some right now. Yeah. Because before, I think they were a little bit like, oh, okay, fine, you can post, you can do this, you can do that. And now they're like, oh, crap. Like, these people are off the chain.
Well, and now I worry about the opposite happening. Now I worry about all these people out there being like, we want Hot Daddy Nick to come after us now. So we're going to go on there and fuck around on purpose. Because let me tell you something. I'm not a Nick Lachey fan, but something piqued my interest in this whole thing. I was like,
Yeah, I know. He got a little sexier, but
a little tiny bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a 98 Degrees fan. I'm too old to be a fan.
Me too. I'm not part of that generation
to even care. So
let me ask you, what'd you think about Trevor? Because I thought this whole thing was performative. I thought they made him do this to see if they could somehow rehab his image because they wanted to put him on a different show or something. I don't know if it was perfect match. That was the rumor, but whatever. But I don't know. I just feel like this was
performative. You think they care about Trevor that much?
I don't know. I thought it was a real weird move to have him there and bring him out and make him like confess his sins to the Lacheys, and then they decide whether or not they're going to like admonish his behavior. I don't know. It's weird.
I feel like the producers might have tricked him a little bit, which is fine with me because he tricked everybody else, which is I think they said to him, hey, do you want an opportunity to come on the show? You can clear things up. You can put yourself out there and you can do that. And I think Trevor thought, OK, maybe this is what I need to do. I've got to rehab myself. And I think that Trevor put together a talk, put together like a little bit of a 5-minute speech mm-hmm. about what his reason was. I think he figured out what his story is. He put it all together. And then he went out there and then they started doing the dramatic reading of the text messages between Vanessa and Nick, which was great.
Everything. Oh,
beautiful. And I think then he was shocked. I think that was like, oh, crap. Yeah. You know, it's one thing to sort of talk around this and then you can give your 5-minute speech about, oh, well, this is what was really going on and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's another to sort of be confronted with, I love you. You know, wait until I can't wait to marry you, blah, blah, blah. And then for him to be able to come up with his excuse, which I think was we weren't very serious. He then tries to grab at that a little bit.
And I'm so tired of this blanket excuse of we're toxic. I'm toxic. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's not enough to just be like, well, we're toxic or I'm toxic. And that excuses all of your behavior. Like, how about we have a toxic relationship and here's why that's bad and here's how I need to work on that. Like, I'm so tired of this blanket, like, pardon. Oh, we're just toxic.
And I feel like this is like, I'm sorry, this is like white man disease. I swear to God. There's a little bit of this, right? Where it's like, there's so many of these men who have had such privilege. They've just, you know, walked around this world where, you know, your life is, you know, your life has just been great. You don't think it's great, but you have no idea what the other side is like. Right. So you know, you're bebopping around and there's this attitude of like, well, I just need to kind of like, oh, I'm sorry. And oh, right. I'm a bad boy. Like spank me, you know, this kind of thing. And I think Trevor thought he was cute and charming enough to be able to do that for us. And I think this is what's changing in our world. This is what's getting people angry is we're kind of coming at this from a different place now where we're going, we're sick of this. You know, we're sick of these people that have all this privilege coming in and taking no accountability or responsibility. And I do think some of this is the world that we live in today, like how people feel about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Like this is the stuff that's very, very layered about all of this is the world that we live in and how we feel about people being honest to us, right? The Kate Middleton thing is a great example of that. Of like, you know, that's, yes. I'm not even a royal person. And Brooke and I were yammering on about that the other day for an hour. Just like, what is going on?
No, what's happening? I agree with you, authenticity,
though. Right?
There's something about a lot of these men. And this is, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about this last time. Like, I see this on Married at First Sight too, but I think it is beginning to spill over into the women as well, but it's mostly the men, I think, who I just can't trust anything they're saying on camera. Mm-hmm. So when you do see someone that's authentic on camera, like a Brett from Brett mm-hmm. and Tiffany, you're like, oh, thank God. Like, we love you.
Yes.
And we were all fooled by Trevor. Like, we thought he was this, but then he comes out and you're like, oh, this guy can't act. He's trying to act and this is not working. I didn't need to see it. He claims, you know, my term, broth. He had some broth, he claims, and, you know, he's going to ride off into the sunset. Okay, whatever.
Yes, yes.
Then I have Nick lectures everyone about how Love is Blind is to be taken responsibly. whatever. We did learn, just my notes on AD and Clay for 1 second. We did learn she went on dates with Matthew.
Yes, yes. What? Yes, well, she had, you know, she had a feeling about him. I don't know. I don't think everyone's like, oh, he's cute. He looks like Clark Kent. I'm like, I don't think he's cute at all. I don't think that he's, like, maybe if you saw him and he didn't talk at all and you saw him in a coffee shop, you think that's an attractive person.
He's okay. He has serial killer vibes, in my opinion. I can't get past them.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not, he's going to try to kill me when I'm hitchhiking. No.
Mm-mm. So, which also, I love, love, love AD, but also makes me think, oh, AD, what are you doing? You know,
well,
what
I think she clearly, she went on a couple dates with him and was like, no.
Yeah.
So right choice, right move there, AD.
Yeah.
Amy and Johnny, completely boring.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
God, yeah. Yeah. Done. They figured out the condom thing.
They're perfect.
Yeah. They're having sex. Whatever. Great.
So I did want to talk about Jimmy and Chelsea because I feel like we were left not knowing what is going on between them.
Yes.
We had to watch the journalism of ET Online, Entertainment Tonight Online, to find out what their relationship status was.
Yeah.
And that was that they tried to date a couple times, Chelsea said, and it just didn't work. So they're done.
Yes.
But it was weird because they kept touching each other. Mm-hmm. And he was clearly toeing the party line. Like, he was like, I'm not even looking at Jessica. Yes, she is beautiful, but I am not going beyond that because my loyalty is to Chelsea. Like, he was real weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know. I had heard the rumors before the reunion about how, like, oh, they're at a wedding together. And apparently they were at this wedding, but they weren't, quote unquote, together. Mm-hmm. And when he put his hand on her hand, I got the sense that the two of them were just like, we've been through hell. And so maybe, let's just stay strong together kind of thing. But the fact that we spent a lot of time, you know, they were a big storyline and we really didn't get, what the resolution was, where they are, how they feel about each other, how Chelsea felt about what happened. I mean, because Chelsea was trying on dresses. I can imagine if I was Chelsea, I would have been, I mean, that's, I don't know what's worse, being left at the altar or being left at an amusement park. I don't know.
Right, like, at least if you're at the altar, you have your family there.
Yeah, so, or you look pretty and you got to put on the dress.
At Carowinds, you're crying behind the Tilt-A-Whirl. Jesus Christ. Yes. I will say this. So, you know how I was telling you last time, like, I feel like there's more going on behind the scenes that she was responding to. Did you see her on a podcast telling the story about the big fight?
I've seen little pieces of it, and I've heard her talk about various other things, like about the whole Megan Fox thing, and that apparently a lot of them were like, I look like this, I look like that, and she had said a few other people, not just Megan Fox, that I look like Adele, I look like Katy Perry, like that apparently it is that people were drawing pictures of people, like the whole quote-unquote Love is Blind thing isn't, so she was saying, Chelsea was saying, you need to have some rules for this.
I agree.
But and she's right. But no, what was the final story?
Okay. So, and I don't know again why this did not come out on the reunion. Mm-hmm. So she's on a podcast and she says the night that they had the big fight where she was saying to him, I don't want you to go out. I don't want you to be somebody. Mm-hmm. And then you fucked her. I know you fucked that night. Okay. Mm-hmm. Apparently what had pissed her off so much was the night that he had gone out, quote unquote, he said to her, is it okay with you if I go stay at my townhouse? And she's like, yeah, that's fine. I'm going to go out for a wine night with the girls. I understand you want your space. She says, I think that's healthy. Go ahead. Go spend the night by yourself. He calls her. He's fucking FaceTiming her. He's in, like, pretending he's going to bed, like, oh, yawning, you know? Then he pocket dials her by accident 2 minutes later, and she could hear all the friends are there and they're talking about what bar they're going to next. So he fucking lied to her and then went out. And that's what she was reacting to. Like, that was part of it. Now, did she overreact wildly still? Of course. It was wild. But I think, like, she just had this feeling that she was almost being gaslit. Like, he was just lying to her constantly. And I think that's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. It is. And so you do wonder, like, was that edited to make, like, why was all of that taken out?
I don't know. Because they were giving Chelsea the crazy edit.
Yeah.
This is what they do. And, like, that pisses me off because women be crazy. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, it, ugh.
Yes.
Like, but seeing them have that conversation and then her arguing with him about it, I feel like that would have been interesting. I would have liked to have heard what he said. But, like, I feel like production chooses who they're who's going to be the hero and the villain. And they gave Jimmy the hero edit. And
Do
it was
you really
crazy.
Think he got a hero edit, though?
I think he looked a lot better than she did.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I'm with you. I think what's so hard about this is that, right, both things can be true, which is that I think Chelsea was a lot. And I think I think that the production was trying to kind of capture, like, ooh, this is a lot. You know, this is a lot. And at the same time, when you admit, when you omit really important facts like that, then, yeah, it does make her look a little bit crazier than it's what's really happening.
Yeah.
I think that Chelsea just never did herself very, she never did herself any favors with her arguments. I think that was the problem. Like, the arguments were, and then the fact that, I'm sorry, like, I knew that was a bridge too far when she, when he, because the thing is that whether or not you think that she had the right to reveal that on camera or not, that is about, I'm sharing something with you, and if I can't trust that you're going to follow through, then...
Right.
And you have so little time to build trust with someone. You have so little time to build trust. So that, so this is one where it's like, it's not like you've had years of trust and that you did this. It's like, this is like the one shot you had. And
do you,
you
think
really
that he should have waited until the experiment was over to tell her?
About the, that he slept with the other woman?
Yeah.
No, I think that he was trying to be, you know, that's the thing. If he hadn't told her, it would be bad. If he did, I mean, like, I'm sorry. And maybe we all have different opinions about this and people have different opinions about female friends. Like, the reality is that people are going to cheat if they want to cheat. If he wants to keep sleeping with his friend, he's going to keep sleeping with his friend. Like, you cannot,
you can't control
and worry and control all these things. So
it's not in your, within your behavior, your control.
And I think he was trying to be respectful in the sense that he was saying, like, hey, I just want to give you the heads up. We did have this relationship. I do not want you to talk about it on camera because it's not about me. It's about her.
I do, too. I think it was a bit, pretty big bombshell, though. And I think here's what I think. Here's how I think he could have made it better. Tell her the information like he should have. Ask her to not talk about it on camera. But don't go out to the bar with that girl until, like, it's over. Do you know what I mean? Just stay home. For like 6 weeks or whatever, or if you're going out with her, bring Chelsea.
Yeah.
Like, don't go out alone with this woman. Until, because same could be said for her. She has to build trust with him. And how does she trust this situation? She doesn't yet. You know what I mean? So she's reacting as well. Like, here she has, you lied to me and now you're out with her, who I know you slept with. Why are you lying to me about it? You know what I mean? So, like, there's, it, it goes both ways. So I think that this could have been handled way differently. But
yeah, I can see that. But it comes back to the same problem, which is that I, people have these problems all the time in relationships, and people have these fights, and then this happens, and then you realize, like, okay, we need to figure this out. And the problem is they have so little time, right? Like, so that, that if you only have this one experience, then I mean, what if you're Jimmy, what do you do?
Right.
Okay, I guess I have to go based on this. And is it fair to Chelsea? No, but it's part of this process, which, again, I think that I don't know, obviously the two of them were not meant to be, because if they tried to date after and it didn't work, then without the cameras, then it wasn't meant to be. But yeah, I mean, maybe is it unfair of Jimmy to have taken this one moment and decided that's that? Well, then that's that. I mean, there's a little bit of, like, this is who Jimmy is. Okay.
Like, yeah, it doesn't explain her craziness, but it does explain when he would say something and she would go, well, you're responsible for this too. Like, you have a part in this too. Like, without the context of knowing he was doing these things, that felt weird, right? It felt like she couldn't take ownership.
Yeah, that's what I kept pointing out. I was like, that's so weird.
But now it makes more sense.
It does make more sense. And at the same time, she really did need to stop saying, and you.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
There is that piece of it too. Of like,
so yeah. That's it. I have Brittany and Kenneth. She looks like an extra from Dynasty. He was doing principal shit. I forgot they were even there.
Yeah, well, God, and she's such a beautiful woman. Why in God's name did she look like a mother of the bride? I'm like, she looked like she was 50.
Well, she's a conservative Southern woman.
I guess so. Just the hair. Yeah. I mean, if she just wore her hair down.
I do like her. Don't you like her? I do like her.
I do like her. I do. And I've heard various things. Apparently, have you heard this rumor that I never heard this before, but if you get engaged in the pods and don't show up for the wedding, like you don't do the wedding part, you have to pay $50,000.
What?
I saw this on, again, my TikTok research this morning. I went down a rabbit hole and I was like, oh, I didn't know that that was a thing. That's the rumor, unless you get producer's permission.
Oh, okay.
So you cannot just say, I'm not going to do it. Like, you have to get the producer's permission, which is probably why you need to watch a breakup thing.
Apparently,
they had broken up already. And what we saw was them reenacting the breakup, which is why Kenneth was so, you know, so nonchalant about it. Though I've seen Kenneth also say, I'm sorry, you know, this is how I process. And I was really upset, but this is what you saw.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those two, it was just.
It was just a mismatch. I really like both of them independently of each other.
Yes.
But it was just, they just had zero chemistry, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, and I think this is what we're seeing, right? They're good friends, and we'll see what happens, you know, if they can remain friends, even if they're both dating. But yeah, it felt like their whole thing was, oh, we're aligned on all of these, you know, on God and how we see the world, that they thought that would be enough for them.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep saying, everyone's like, is love blind? If Johnny and Amy can get married, if Brett and Tiffany can get married. And I still maintain part of love is blind. Like, love is blind, yes, to a certain point. And you also need to see each other and be attracted to each other.
Yes.
And it just so happens.
And that's a luck game.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is just roll of the dice.
Yep.
Of who that is. So, yes, you can fall in love with somebody to a certain extent, but you can't really ever build a life with them.
Yeah.
So it's like your definition of what is love. Yeah, love can be blind, but marriage isn't. And long-term relationships aren't. So. Right.
Yes, 100%.
Yes. Don't tell Lachey's I said that.
Oh, Daddy Lachey's going to come for you, girl.
Tell me what's what.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to our coverage of Love is Blind. If you're here to hear our conversation about Garrison Brown and Sister Wives, stay tuned. That's coming right at you. I just wanted to give you a chance to dip out in case suicide or suicidal ideation are triggers for you. Please skip the rest of the episode. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. And enjoy this talk if you do decide to stay. But let's talk a little bit about Garrison Brown, because you guys cover Sister Wives. Mm-hmm. You know, I cover Sister Wives. You and I were communicating when it broke. Yes. It was devastating.
It was shocking and devastating. And, you know, we're aware that we don't know these people, but when you've been watching them and talking about them and in their lives for so long, you do feel like you know these people. And, you know, as a parent, I that is hands down the worst thing that could ever happen. That is your 100%. Worst fear. That is
and I've been anxious to talk with you about it. Like, not, you know, I do love when you put your little therapist hat on, but I'm not going to force you. But like, you know, it's interesting that people are struggling, because I feel like there's a lot of kind of judgment going around, right? Mm-hmm. Of, you know, this person's not grieving enough. This person's grieving in this way. Like, Mary got a lot of heat for doing a Friday with Friends on Friday. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you also have to understand that to some extent, this is their life. Like, this is work for them. This is how Mary earns money, right?
Yes.
She keeps this kind of in the forefront. So I just kind of wanted to pick your brain about, like, grief can look different, right? Like,
you can
be quote unquote resuming your normal activities while still in a large state of grief.
Yes. And that's the thing about grief that people don't quite understand is that the first thing is grief is of what it is and what it isn't. You know, grief and moving on from a loss doesn't mean that you ever stop loving the person. You will always right. love them. It just means that time helps you be able to live without them. In their lives. And so how much this person is in your life day to day will affect you in different ways. So if you lose a friend that you don't see every day, yeah. it's going to affect you a little bit differently than losing someone that you do see every day, or, you know, maybe a neighbor you see every day, or your partner, right? Like it's your relationship with that person and how often you saw them and where you were in your lives when all of this happened plays a huge part in it. And the thing about grief is that, you know, there's the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, which is well known, documented, like five the five stages of grief. Yeah. Grief, and then there's also this belief of the sixth stage of grief around sort of healing and moving forward and paying mm-hmm. it forward. And I do believe in that as well. I think that is really important part of the process. But the thing is that you don't just, okay, I'm in denial and now I'm sad, you know, right. now I'm angry right. and now I'm bargaining. Right. It's you go through this every day for, you know, you might be angry for several days, then you might be fine. Then mm-hmm. you might be sad. And then you might be back to angry. And then you might be bargaining and angry and denial and acceptance all on the same day. And people have a hard time with this because they feel like, oh, I should be, they either think, oh, I should be over this by now, or why am I not feeling this? And the thing is that it looks different for everyone. It's going to feel different for everyone. And that, yeah, there are some people where it's not going to hit them for 4 or 5 months or yeah. the holidays when you're like, this is normally when I see this person. Yeah. And now this is really hitting me. Or because I had mentioned before we were recording, you know, I've lost 2 friends. I lost my college roommate when I was 27. And then I lost a very good friend of mine when I was 46. Both at the same, they were both about the same age as myself. And it's very odd losing good friends, you know, like,
yeah,
it,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's funny because people are like, why don't you go on girls trips? And I'm always like, because they're dead, you know,
yeah.
like
my girlfriend's yeah. gone. You lost your girlfriend.
So, yeah. So the thing is that it's, and for me, it's very much like neither one of these people were in my life on a daily basis. So when it hit me hard, but it was also, it's been very up and down over the years
yeah.
of hearing a song, remembering something, being back in time. Like, and so I will feel like I am back in that first day of learning about them passing away very easily now, 20 some odd years later. And that's what happens wow. for people.
Yeah.
So it isn't, and then I'll have days and weeks and months where I'm fine and I'm bebopping along and all of these things. So there is no right or wrong way of grieving. It looks different for everyone. It doesn't end after a couple months. It is a long process. It's most acute in the first 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that there's different kinds of people passing. When people pass, it's hard because there's complex trauma. I mean, there's complex grief, and then there's grief and there's complex grief, right? So mm-hmm. what happened with Garrison is complex because he was young. He was out of the norm, right?
Right.
So it's very different when he's a grandparent.
And because of the way that he died, I'm sure.
Yes. And it's a very violent death.
Mm-hmm.
And so when when a grandparent passes away, it's sad and it's all sure. of the feels sure. and it's all of those things, but it's a very different feeling than when your child passes away or when someone your own age passes away. And then losing them to cancer or some disease where you had the ability to grieve.
There's
as you
anticipatory
go.
Grief.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And then you've got something like this and suicide it's a violent way. It's mm-hmm. violent. It's scary. It's all of a sudden it's all of those things. And, you know, my very, very first, client that I ever worked with. So when you're in school, you start this practicum when you're in school. So they like, and you usually, you know, they kind of just thrust you out there. And my very, very first client that I ever worked with, like in a room alone with, she was someone who her husband, they had a young daughter and her husband, they were both struggled with alcoholism and he had relapsed and he had gone into the other room and shot himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the thing was actually that helped me was the fact that she just cried the entire time. So I just had to be there and like nod yeah. my head and, right. you know, sort of.
How old were you at this point?
I was, God, 30. 30, wow. You know.
That's so a I lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't 20, but still.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some that do it. But it's, yeah, I mean, I had already lost one of my friends by then. Right. So I had some sort of sense of what was going on here, which is why I wanted to do the practicum. That's one of the reasons. I've had these kinds of clients. I've worked with survivors of suicide, people whose partners and parents committed suicide, and doing groups like that, and the impact of how it is impacts everybody because it's such a ripple effect. And that, you know, this will impact and change everybody's lives from here on out. Like it's
would that be like vicarious trauma?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But I think that I think it sparks a lot of feelings for a lot of people. I think there's the core of the loss of a human being and how you feel. I think it's, you know, for those of us who are parents and knowing what it's like, I just kept thinking about Janelle and Christine this mother figure of what that would be. But really, you know, I really keep thinking about Janelle and what this is like for her, and then the siblings and how this impacts them and their feelings. And then there's also, you know, it's also, you have a lot of complex feelings about these people because you can also be very angry at them. I'm like, what did you do?
Right.
Like what, you know, and so, and that can make you feel guilty.
I think it is a human reaction to look for somebody to blame.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
And but you have to understand like the state of mind someone's in, and you know, I've been there. I talk about that in my book. I've been there when I was a kid. You're not thinking straight.
No.
Right. Like you're not thinking logically, and there's a lot of factors. And so my point is there's no answer. Like there's no answer to be found.
There's no, there's absolutely just it. No answer. And it's not about, you know, I would urge people to just don't judge each other for how they're processing it and doing it. You know, I certainly there's been rumblings of people like, oh, they're making money from this and they're doing this. And it's like, fine, you know, okay, is that my place to judge whether or not that's right or wrong? You know, I think each, you have to do what feels right for you. And that's really what I've seen with all the podcasters. And, you know, there has been a little bit of communication with all of us who cover Sister Wives behind the scenes of like, you know, how are people feeling about this? And what do you plan to do? And I think that it really came from a good place of like, I'm trying to understand how I feel. Am I on the same page as other people? You know, do you and I align, you know, with it? Do you and I align? And also looking for that validation because
I think where we landed, a lot of us, is we're just going to take our rage from Cody Brown momentarily and put it on Garrick Merrifield.
Yes. Something like that.
Just for now. Just for now. I mean, but that's another thing. Like I feel like people are really judging one another for like, so say for example, oh, I want to go back and watch Sister Wives again. That's okay. Some people are going to find comfort in that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's perfectly fine. And some people aren't. And for me, it was a decision of the way that I talk about Cody and everybody else would not be funny for me knowing what they're going through. So like that was my own personal decision, but will I watch Sister Wives again? I think I will. I think I absolutely will watch it again. It'll be interesting to see what they go, how they move forward through this.
Yeah. Because I think that's the other thing is right with these podcasts and how we consume media now, it's this weird thing. Right. And it makes me laugh because we watch these shows and then I'll listen to like 15 hours of podcasts about this 1 hour of television.
We need 15 hours of analysis over Cody and Janelle and Mary and Robin sitting on a patio having a conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. And, and at the same time, I think that each of us has, you know, these things that we consume that we like. I think that there are also shows that each of us consumes that we don't really listen to any commentary on. And then there's other shows that we listen to a little bit. And there's other shows that we listen to a ton of commentary on. So I think so much of this is about how do you consume this entertainment? How do you take it? How do you take it in? And yeah, as someone who covers the show, it's so much of it is about, it's about our relationship to the show and how we feel about it. And if something is off there, if we don't feel comfortable,
right,
you know, talking about it or something's changed, then yeah, it's the respect of the person that's putting out the putting out right. the content to right. decide how they're going to do it. And then it's everybody on the other side. It's your decision about what you consume.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, some kind of virtue signaling. It's honestly, I don't judge people for listening to pods that are covering. I don't any of that. It's just, I can't be funny about it right now. That's all.
Yeah.
Like I still, believe me, if I get a chance to crack a joke about Cody Brown, I'm going to, if it's appropriate. But yes. I just can't go after him. You know what I mean? Like, he's probably a lot of what we're saying, he's probably saying it to himself. And, you know, there's nothing you could say about Cody Brown right now that he's not thinking, I'm sure, on some level. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. It is Cody.
I don't know. And so, you know, what I was before, it was like, this isn't a mission statement anymore. This isn't like... Right. You know, this isn't, and the show has very much been all about the relationship of this family and these adult relationships within each other.
Yes.
The kids are sort of the separate thing.
Yep.
And so that's why it's like, well, but how, you know, it's one thing with Christine getting a divorce, because this was about this adult relationship.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, now that it's about the kids, it's like,
yeah,
we're moving into this weird area, right? Once Logan was, you know, off at college, we never saw him again. And it was like, yeah, we need to respect that that was Logan's choice. Mm-hmm. Like, Logan's choosing to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, suicide is, it's a very impulsive act. It's why a lot of young people do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is so difficult, and it takes so long for people to sort of suss out. Because each individual person that knew that person needs to suss out and figure out, like, how am I going to think about this? How am I going to process this? How am I going to move forward? And how do I move forward loving that person and loving them and honoring them in the best way that I know how? And how do I move forward without being angry and upset and sad and blaming myself? Because the reality is that, you know, like you said, everyone is looking for someone to blame. And that's what drives me crazy is, and you see this in businesses and relationships where everyone has to blame somebody, but it's like, you've just got to, you know, the hardest thing is you've got to just let it be. It is.
It just has to sit. Yep.
It just has to sit. You don't need to blame people and you don't need to blame yourself and you don't need to blame other people.
Yeah.
And that part's hard. That's the shades of gray that people have a very hard time. And right. Like if we talk about Clay, like that's Clay's issue. Like he can't.
Yes.
Sorry. He cannot have a relationship with his father. That's somewhere in between all those things.
Yeah.
And so we're asking a lot of people right now to like sit with this in between. And so that's what you're seeing. People are reacting to that. Like, I don't want to sit with the in between. So F you, you know, or F me, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And I do want everyone to understand, like, you have permission to grieve Garrison Brown, even though he's like a person on television show, you know, some might say a character on TV show, whatever. It's, you know, Janelle and Cody and Christine and Mary and all the siblings, like, they need that energy and that good vibes. Send them.
Yes.
100%. Mm-hmm. Prayers, whatever you believe in, do it. And don't feel weird because it's a TV show, because it's been part of our lives for a long time. Yeah. And we do have a relationship to them. And that's okay. Yeah. That's okay.
And the other thing, too, is they might, you also have to recognize if they do the show, right, you then have a choice whether or not you're going to watch it.
Yep.
And if they do the show, there's a little bit of, I mean, their livelihood has been wrapped up in all of this.
Like, yeah.
If they do, I don't blame them. I mean, this is the curse of these reality shows is you get on the show and it feels like you've struck gold. Mm-hmm. But then you have to stay on the show in order for all the other pieces of your, you know, livelihood to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we see with Housewives. And that's what we're seeing with, you know, even Love is Blind had this problem too, right? With people getting fired and then not being able to find other jobs. And
yes,
you know, you can't be angry, because the thing is that can Cody or Janelle or any of these people go in and apply for a job these days? Like, no.
Could you imagine Cody? I bet he could work at David Yurman Jewelry.
Oh, yes, he could. He could
over the road. All right, guys. And also, too, I just want to say, you know, if you or someone you love is struggling with suicide, please call 988. That's the suicide hotline. You could text, you can call, you can, you know, get them anytime.
And very important. Quickly, I've worked on suicide hotlines. And if you're someone who's interested in mental health, or if you think about, it's a great way to learn if going on a suicide hotline and working on it is a great way to know if you want to do it. But the flip side of it is, I think a lot of times people think you have to be actively suicidal to call a suicide hotline, and you don't. The majority of the people that called us weren't. Lot of times they were people who were lonely, needed someone to talk to. It was preventative for them to not get to that place. They needed some human contact. So if you're struggling with all this and you feel like I have no one to talk to, if you are, you know, just feeling really low and you don't know what direction to go in, you do not have to be at this very, very low point. Even if you're just like, I'm curious and I want to see what it's like, call.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
Just call.
You don't have to wait till you're in crisis.
Yes.
It's a very good point.
Yes. It's, you should do, the minute you have an inkling, that's when you should do it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, absolutely.
We said it all.
Yes, we said it all.
This is what happens when you get two little sibs on the mic. Yes, you know, our big sisters aren't here.
Yeah, I know. To like
to stop us.
Slap my hand and tell me I'm moving too fast or I'm doing this or I'm doing that. Yeah. That
all right. Why don't you remind everyone where you are, what you're doing?
Yes. So
and tell us about your therapy website if somebody wants
to. Oh, yes. So well, the podcast is Psych Legal Pop or Pop Psych. What did you call it? Legal
Pop. Pop Legal Psyche?
So it is Psych Legal Pop. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Please come check us out. Yes, we are covering Seeking Sister Wives and we cover documentaries. I'm a therapist. My sister's an attorney. And, you know, much to people's chagrin, we don't always like label things of like, this is a therapist right. talking. This right. is a but
it colors the way you see things.
Absolutely. You get like an introverted, you know, risk averse person, like this lawyer. And then you get like the free for all empathetic. Like, yep. I believe everybody's telling me the truth. Therapist.
Yes.
And we have a very exciting announcement this Wednesday. So please tune in. We're very excited. And and you can check out me, Tess Brigham. You go to tessbrigham.com. I am a therapist and I specialize in working with young adults, Gen Xers, Gen Zers and millennials.
I'll take young adults. Yeah. Thank you.
And so if you want to learn more about me, just go there. I do.
And they can follow you on Instagram, right?
Oh, yeah. Follow me on Instagram. I haven't been posting so much. I mean, I've been focusing more on LinkedIn, but for my personal stuff. But yes, you can follow Psych Legal Pop on Instagram or TikTok. That's me.
Okay. All right.
So, awesome.
Well, thank you so much. You're my favorite therapist to bring out and talk to. And,
thank you.
As promised, guys, next week we'll talk about my mom.
I'm here for it.
I just won't publish it, but it'll take us 6 hours. All right, Tess, thanks so much. And guys, stay tuned with us. Join our Facebook group, Backdoor Friends, if you haven't already. We got a lot of good stuff coming up this week. Stephanie and I, for some reason, decided to watch Hunting Housewives, a terrible Lifetime movie that I just wanted to burn my house down when I was done watching it. And then next week, we're starting Virgin River. The rewatch. We're so excited. It's our cheesiest, guiltiest pleasure. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, I watched the first couple seasons, and then I got really.
God, we love it so much. Bring on the cheese. We love it.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.